Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 1 month ago, online poker was huge in the United States. Millions of players, billions of dollars, nonstop games, a whole industry built around it. No small number of Americans actually making their living at it. Then April 15th, what they're calling Black Friday in the online poker world, federal prosecutors smacking down poker sites, seizing assets, arresting operators, demanding billions. And online poker dead in the water in the USA. This hour on Point, what just happened and why? The culture, flameout, and fate of online poker. You can join the conversation. Are you thinking back off feds or good riddance? Were you a player? Big, small? What was it like when the games were flush? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll hear from a top player today and a legal expert on the case against online poker. Joining me first in our studio is Vin Narayanan, managing editor at the Casino City Times. He's been following online poker and the big shutdown. Vin, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So this is an earthquake in this world, and it's no small world, or was no small world.
It was no small world. When you take the United States alone, there were about $6 billion industry online poker was. And that's just money moving from players to poker rooms and back. And that's how much the online poker rooms were making off the U.S. players. And the big players in that were Full Tilt, Poker Stars, and Absolute Poker. Poker Stars was by far and away the biggest online poker room in the world. Full Tilt was second, and Absolute Poker was a little ways back. And so that's $6 billion. And there was a huge industry that surrounded it. You had poker TV shows, you had poker magazines.
Huge.
Huge.
All supported by advertising from basically those three bigs.
From those three big online poker rooms, absolutely. They're supported by the advertising. And that actually poker culture grew up. Starting in 2002, the World Streets of Poker just blew up, and it went from 800 participants to 2006. It had over 8,000 participants.
Now, the World Series of Poker, what, does that start online and end in the physical realm?
No,
or it's all in the,
it's
all at the tables?
It's all in the physical world.
But that was driven, that growth driven in no small part by the fact that online poker was driving this huge resurgence of poker interest.
Absolutely. There's a guy named Chris Moneymaker, and what a great name that is for a poker player.
He's an accountant from Nashville or somewhere.
An accountant from Nashville. Yeah. He won the World Series of Poker main event.
Amateur, who stepped in and won $2.5 million?
Yes. Amateur stepped in and won in 2003. And everyone saw him win. And the reason he won is he got into the tournament because he played in an online poker satellite.
Right.
And so everyone saw that. Yeah. And everyone started playing online poker. And it was this huge rush to play. And what happened was you had 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids. That's all they did was play online poker. And as they played online poker, they got better and better and better at it. And then they started making a living at it. And so
this thing that we associated with old guys and cigars and floating games in people's basements or dens, suddenly it was just young and hip and all over the web.
Suddenly it was young, hip, all over the web, all over TV. And they weren't making money the usual way. Normally when you think about making money in a poker room, you think smoking cigar, going to casino, playing for 20, 25 hours. That's not the way these young kids work. What they do is they get in front of a computer screen and they play 30, 35 tables at a time. Some play 8, some play 10. Depends on how good you are.
That many games going on at once. They're in.
And Havoc,
Or were.
The Havoc Khan was the best of the multi-tablers, and he could do 30, 35, 40 games at a time. But a lot of them were doing 8, 10, 12 games at a time. And what happens is it allows them to play a lot more hands, win a lot more money, grind out a lot more hands, and get a lot more experience faster and quicker than they could anyway else.
Now, there was a kind of structure to this, maybe in every industry, but in this one too, you know, sort of the little fish, and then the sort of pretty good players, the money channeling up through them, and then the really great players at the top who harvested big bucks off online poker.
Yeah, it was a three-tier ecosystem, and you described it perfectly. And I guess to understand it, before you get to the three-tier ecosystem of online poker, look at what poker was like before there was online poker.
Mm-hmm.
Before, there were fish and there were sharks. So it's the old line.
What, you were either at the big table in Vegas or somewhere, or you were just playing.
Yeah, it's the old line from Rounders. If you sit down at a table and you can't identify who the fish is, it's you. That was the way poker used to be.
Yeah.
But then when online poker came along, you had these small micro stakes players, and playing at 1 cent, 2 cent table for really small, and these were the fish, and they knew they were fish. They couldn't play at the bigger stake, but they were learning to play the game.
Plus, it's the internet, so there were gazillions of them. I've heard them called, this is not my world, but poking around here, people call them the donkeys because they brought the gold. A little bit from each one, but it added up to a lot of money.
Oh, absolutely. And donkeys is a classic online poker term. These are the guys that don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. When they get on the site and they sit down, they make all the bad plays. They make all the wrong plays, and the money just flows in your direction. If you're playing online poker, you want to be playing against a bunch of donkeys.
So there they were, the fish, the donkeys, call it what you were. At the mid-tier, what kind of money were we talking about, those players?
Those players could grind out a living of $100,000 a year, $200,000 a year.
That was mid-tier?
That was mid-tier. Yeah, some of them were grinding up $50,000 to $75,000 a year.
Making a living, more or less.
Oh, they are absolutely making a living, more or less. And what happened with those mid-tier players was eventually they got these sponsorships from online poker rooms. And so Full Tilt.
Like indie race car
driver. Like an indie race car driver.
Yeah.
And so they would pay for their buy-ins into tournaments and get them playing online all the time. And then you had your big stars. And these are the Sharks. These are your Daniel Negreanu's and your Phil Ivey's. The best of the best players. And they're playing at the high stakes nosebleed games.
Now still online?
Still
or
online.
Does it jump to the real table?
Well, it jumps to the real table.
Or it's both?
It's both. It jumps to the real table at some point, but it's both. But they're playing online and they're playing live tournaments. Well, what happens is when you get the sponsorship money, and then these big stars got the sponsorship money too, and they were paid to play on TV. I mean, that's why they got the sponsorship
money.
And
what kind of stakes? What kind of money are we talking about?
Oh, all their buy-ins would be paid. And so for the World Series of Poker main event, that's a $10,000 buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
They would be paid for that. If they were going on a high-stakes poker, the cash buy-in, those companies would pay for that.
And the pots that they would be going after?
They got to keep that money.
But I mean, what kind of money would be in the pot of these games online?
Yeah.
How big would it
get? It depends on the stakes. For the mid-tier players, you're talking pots that are thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
But if you're playing in a nosebleed game, you can get pots as big as $500,000, $600,000 at the really super high levels.
So we're talking real money here. Lots of players down at the little level, then all the way up. It seemed like half the country, though. Again, I've never played a hand online, but you just heard more and more about it at a certain point. April 15th, the door came crashing down. The gate came down. I mean, the feds came in and they said, no, all done. And they went, these three big online poker outfits you're talking about, they're all offshore. Well, Costa Rica, the Isle of Man, the UK, Ireland,
Yes, Ireland, right? Full Tilt's based on Ireland, but I believe they're licensed in Alderney.
Okay.
But yes.
This is still happening. Costa Rica, there was some kind of raid yesterday on the offices of one of these.
Absolute Poker and Ultimate Bet are located in Costa Rica, but they're actually licensed by the Kanawaki, which is.
Is that Native American?
It's a Native American tribe based just outside of Montreal.
Right.
And so that's where they're licensed. But they're headquartered down in Costa Rica. And what happened was the Costa Rican equivalent of the FBI actually raided the offices of Absolute Poker and Absolute Poker and Ultimate Bet. And they raided the office of Poker Stars. Now, Poker Stars is up and running again. Those offices are up and running.
Yeah.
And so the Costa Rican authorities were looking for Jeff Toms, one of the original founders of Absolute Poker and Ultimate Bet, and didn't find him there. Absolute Poker has laid off in Ultimate Bet, the parent company, Blanca Games. They've laid off all their employees. They're rehiring about 20% of them to keep the operations running. And so you've got that aspect going on. And they've also laid off their roster of pros. These are the pros that we're talking about that relied on these poker rooms to help them build the lane and sponsor them and pay their buy-ins and that sort of thing.
All gone.
Joe Seabach, Prahlad Freeman, really big names in the poker world.
Not to mention that the feds are going after something like $3 billion that they want here, that a lot of the money that was used in online poker is frozen online or wherever it is. People can't get to it. And all these charges brought against people, we're talking about years and years potentially in jail if it goes badly for these guys, for something that not everybody agrees should even be illegal. There's this debate with poker. Is poker gambling or is it a game of skill? Is it covered? The charges brought here, money laundering. Vin Narayanan, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Salem, Oregon, Jeffrey Standen. He's a law professor at Willamette University. He teaches sports and gaming law. He blogs on sports and gambling at the Sports Law Professor. Jeff Standen, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, thank you, and Glad to be here.
Who brought the charges on April 15th? What exactly happened legally against whom on that day?
Well, I think Vic's done a good job in introducing the topic. Makes me want to go play online poker, all that money.
Control yourself.
But on April 15, the DOJ unveiled its indictments. The indictments had actually been handed down about a month prior to that, but had been kept under seal. And for some reason, the DOJ decided April 15 was a good day to reveal its indictments. And the indictments brought a series of charges against the online operators that Vic has mentioned, basically involving violations of the federal UIGEA Act, the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, Illegal Gambling Business Act, and bank fraud and money laundering. So a series of indictments against the various operators and their principals, a couple of bank officers here in the U.S., a rather broadly mind attack against the against online poker.
They want $3 billion in compensation from the online companies. They're looking at up to 65 years of prison time for 11 defendants. Does it look like they have a strong case here? Is online poker dead in the USA with these shutdowns and charges, Jeff?
Well, the answer to that, I think it's two-part. The answer is no. The DOJ does not have a strong case, in my view. But yes, it could mean at least a severe interruption to online poker. What's happened here is that DOJ has chosen what I would characterize as a rather dubious theory of law. And based upon that dubious theory of law has brought a federal criminal indictment. And it's very hard for any person, online or offline or onshore or offshore, to be faced with a criminal indictment and try to continue operations. And so I suspect because of the severity of the charges, the incentive is going to be very large for these online operators to try to make some kind of accommodation with the DOJ.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking today about the big U.S. crackdown on online poker. Billions of dollars, millions of players, an industry and a culture in the spotlight as federal prosecutors have come in with big charges, big demands for money. Shut those websites down. Online poker sites sponsored and advertised with a lot of the big poker tournaments. Here's a 2008 commercial from PokerStars.net, one of the big three sites shut down on Black Friday, April 15th. They were advertising the annual World Series of Poker.
The time has arrived to become a champion. Be one of the elite and join us daily at PokerStars.net.
Yeah, one of the elite, but not so elite. It was millions of people, we're told, playing at its height. Many, many still around the world, but in the United States of America, the USA, boom, gate is down, charges are launched, people may be going to jail, big demands for money, a lot of money that was in there waiting to be played online, frozen. I'm joined today from Willamette University in Oregon by Jeffrey Standen, law professor there, blogs at the Sports Law Professor, and with me in the studio, Vin Narayanan, managing editor at the Casino City Times. He's been covering online poker in the Department of Justice crackdown. Jeff Standen, take us further into this. On the banking side, there's banking violations and money laundering charges in here. Now, why is that? What's that have to do with poker?
Well, the banking charge is a little bit of an odd duck in this indictment because the charges are bank fraud. And the Supreme Court has held, and it's always the case as a matter of sort of logic, that fraud has to have a victim. There must be somebody whose money was cheated or lost in the scheme. And here, everyone's a winner. The poker players wanted their money to go to these offshore sites. Banks, of course, made money off the transfer of that money from U.S. citizens to offshore sites. And then, of course, the offshore operators made money from the deposits. So it's.
But weren't they lying about it? I mean, I'm reading here that they were disguising these transfers of money as payments for golf clubs and flowers and I don't know what all kinds of stuff. Not the real deal.
Yeah, and you know, of all the charges, those are the ones that might resonate the most with a jury, the ones that most have the strongest claim of legality. Even though it's hard to find a victim, you know, that they were manipulating the banking system quite a bit, it sounds like, if the DOJ can prove the truth of those allegations. But it's the other charges that are really the ones that are more dubious merit, because what people don't understand about federal law, U.S. law, is that there is no federal law against poker. the federal statutes at issue here, the UIGEA statute, the IGB statute,
yeah.
the money laundering statute, they only prohibit unlawful gambling, gambling that's unlawful under state law. And so really, with the crime is committed, has been committed only if it's only if the conduct, the poker play, was illegal under state law. And that's a very dubious assertion.
But is what you're asserting obvious, or is that also up for grabs here? I mean, I know there's been a huge lobbying effort around this, lots of people piling in on behalf of online poker, trying to get the Justice Department to lay off. I mean, even former Senator Al D'Amato is out there talking about how this is a game of skill, this is not chance, this is not gambling. Lay off. Is it so obvious to everybody that it doesn't fall under this unlawful gambling code, Jeff?
No, it's not at all obvious, and states differ quite a bit in their approach. In many states, probably most, poker play is presumptively legal, and it's a hard claim to make, but we could talk about that. But in many other states, it seems like it's not legal. And so what we have is conduct that's prohibited in some American states and permitted in others. Yet the DOJ indictment, by basically asserting a federal criminal indictment against these offshore operators, has had the effect of shutting down all U.S. operations, even in places where it'd be perfectly legal under state and federal law for players to play poker online.
Vin Ryan, did everybody in this world know that they were out on such thin ice that the gate could crash down at any time here and everything be blown away?
Yeah, I guess the answer to that question is yes and no. The online poker system, its ecosystem, is only as good as its ability to move money in and out of the system.
Mm-hmm. Which is in and out of this country, since
which
they
is
were
in
offshore.
Exactly, which is in and out of this country, which is offshore. And so when the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act passed in 2006, mm-hmm. it criminalized moving the money to gambling operations. Now, online
some pulled out then. At least one big party pulled out, didn't it?
Party Poker pulled out, and then the DOJ went after NetTeller, which was a big e-wallet.
It was like the PayPal for online gambling.
Mm-hmm. And so they went after NetTeller. NetTeller ended up settling the case, and they pulled out of the U.S., so they wouldn't accept transactions from the U.S. So from that point on, everyone that was part of the ecosystem knew that, you want to know what, it's getting tougher. It may or may not be legal, according to the Department of Justice.
But the big three stayed right in there. I mean, they were making so much money, I guess. Nobody wanted to quit.
The big three stayed in there. Nobody wanted to quit. The poker players didn't want to stop playing. And the poker companies made the same argument Jeff is making, is that, look, playing poker is legal. The only state that I know of where it's explicitly forbidden is the state of Washington, where it's a Class C felony. And then Utah and Hawaii don't allow any gambling whatsoever. So those are the places where it's expressly forbidden.
But the big casinos were getting in here, too. I mean, Wynn Resort, Steve Wynn, big casino operators, they were looking to tie up with these online poker players. They just pulled out after the Justice Department came in, right?
Well, Wynn had announced a deal with PokerStars. They were going to create PokerStarsWynn.com when it was licensed and regulated in the United States. The Fertittas brothers, which owned the Station Casinos out in Las Vegas, they had a deal with Full Tilt.
And so these are the big boys who were coming in here to play alongside.
And they
vanished now.
And they took a gamble. And they said, look, these are the market leaders. If and when it becomes online regulated, these are the guys that have the database of all the names. They know where everyone is, and we're going to roll the dice and say, let's partner up with them. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, no harm, no foul.
I want to talk about why this happens now. In whose interest is this? I mean, whenever anything happens with gambling, you always wonder who wins, who loses from the way this all came down. But we've got so many callers here. Vin, Jeff Standen, please stand by. Ashley, Braintree, Massachusetts. Thanks for calling, Ashley. You're on the air. What do you know?
Well, I'm somebody who is one of the losers in all of this because I was a regular player online. I'm a professional poker player as a hobby, a semi-professional,
okay.
I should say. And I wrote prodigiously about poker, poker strategy, poker lifestyle. And when the UIGEA was passed, it took a huge bite out of my ability to make money doing that. I don't know if people know how the UIGEA was passed. It was a travesty. It was enacted in the dead of night, no public scrutiny, attached to the Port Security Act, and it became law before anybody knew about it. It's putting us into this horrible situation now, this morass of conflicting views on gambling and whether it's gambling or not. Poker should be legalized on the Internet. It should be taxed. It should be regulated so that we can get some revenue, make sure there are only good operators.
Ashley, with respect, I mean, I know you lost your living here, and I can see you feel that way, and I understand the case for it. But, you know, we've often had laws against gambling in this country. So you say should, but what about somebody else who says, no, it shouldn't? It's gambling. It's, you know, there's problems associated.
Gambling, yes, That's right. We're all against gambling except for lotteries and racetracks and casinos and everything else. It's the highest form of hypocrisy to try to ban it from the internet when we are promoting it. The states are gaining revenue they need by having gambling. So how can we say that poker on the internet is somehow immoral while we embrace it when it's at the corner drugstore selling lottery tickets?
So do you think it's ever coming back, Ashley?
I sure hope it is.
It sounds like some coins in your pocket may depend on it. I appreciate your call. I want to welcome into our conversation right here, if I may. And Vin, Jeff, please stand by. Scott Doran joins us now from Medina, New York. He's played poker professionally since he got out of college in 08. Makes his home in Las Vegas, though he's thinking about maybe moving to Monaco now, I understand. He won the $10,000 buy-in, no-limit hold'em event at the World Championship of Online Poker in 2008. Is well-known in the high nosebleed circles of this game. Scott Doran, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hey, Tom.
So we are hearing, Scott, that some people had money online when everything got shut down, and it's still trapped online. Does that include you?
Yeah, I actually have quite a bit of money locked online. Luckily, we recently got our money back from PokerStars, but still waiting on Full Tilt Poker and Absolute. I was lucky enough to not have a huge portion of my bankroll locked up on there, but I definitely know a lot of other online pros who had, you know, up to 80-90% of their net worth locked up online.
I don't really know what huge is in this world. I mean, what kind of money did you have online when the feds came down on everything, Scott?
Well, I had in the low six figures, but you know, there's definitely people who had upwards of 5-10 million locked up online.
Now, this is your world, though. You also play at physical tables, right? You don't play only online. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I live in Las Vegas, so I play quite a bit live, too. So I have some other options still. I've been living in Las Vegas for about 3 years.
The tables are still there. I understand that you have considered very recently sort of leaving the country for Monaco or somewhere else to play online. Why would you do that, and might you do it?
I'm still considering it. I've looked into it a little bit more, and it seems like it's a little tougher than I originally thought. You have to establish residency in another country, and so I'm probably leaning towards not doing that. But a lot of online players are going to do that, players who their income comes exclusively from online, who don't play live poker in the casinos.
So it would potentially be worth your while or their while, because there's just that much poker going on internationally, to be somewhere where there was no legal problem with it would make that possible to be in the game.
Yeah, online poker still goes on in the world. It, you know, goes on everywhere as far as I know, except in the United States. So, I mean, it's, of course, a large share of the market was in the United States, so it's definitely much smaller now, but it still exists.
Scott, what do you think it's going to mean for poker generally and for big-time players like yourself if you can't do it online in this country, and so now you're going to the physical tables there in Vegas? Does it change the picture somehow at all?
Yeah, I think it definitely makes it much tougher. You know, a lot of people might think that it's going to make live poker easier because now so many people are just going to play live poker in the casinos instead of online. But the problem is at the higher stakes, most of the people moving over to live poker are the young professionals like myself. And granted, there are more people playing, but they're actually tougher games now, from at least what I've seen in the past 3 weeks as I've been playing.
So more sharks at the table, more top players you're up against,
right.
I guess.
That's right.
Scott, one way or another, we wish you luck with it, and we thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Scott Doran, big-time poker player there, joining us from Medina, New York, trying to figure out his life on this side of all the changes. Let's get a caller, Newport News, Virginia. Seth is on the line. Hi, Seth. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
What do you know?
Well, basically, I just made a comment. I'm more of the donkey players. I come and drop my money and give it away to people, but I do it for fun. I have a cousin, though. He plays professionally. He makes a living off of it. He is top tier, making 100 grand off tables, grinding out 10, 20 tables at a time, lives in Vegas, is what he does for a living. And recently been, you know, keeping some contact, just seeing how upset they are, these players are, about losing their, you know, jobs pretty much. It's more of a game, but for them it's a living.
So it's a living, but, I mean, do you think it should be there? Is it gambling that we had to crack down on? Do you understand why the prosecutors have come after it, Seth?
Yeah, well, yeah, I definitely understand. It's gambling, it's legal, but who's to say, like, I mean, it's, when you're online, it's like anything, and online, there's, who knows where you're at. You're not running a casino in your home.
I mean, here's it. We've got a commenter online. Let me just put it to you. It says, online poker is very destructive to families. Addicts ignore family obligations, deplete bank accounts, and isolate themselves. What about that, Seth?
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, when you gamble, you're taking a risk. Some people are good at it. Some people are bad at it. I guess that's a bad thing. It's a risk you take, though, when you go to start it.
Yeah, no question. And it's always available if it's online. Some may be troubled by it. Others making a living at it. Appreciate your call. Vin Narayanan, how do you read why this happened now? What's going on here? What's the backstory on this?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple elements to the backstory. The first element to the backstory is all the online gambling investigations that go on in the United States are housed in the Southern District of New York. That's the U.S. Attorney's Office that's prosecuting this case.
These are the same guys who have been going after big hedge fund guys and all the rest.
Yes, yeah.
In fact, the same prosecutor, I think.
It's the same prosecutor. And so they have sort of a two-part approach to this. One is that they take seriously protecting the financial systems of the United States.
So if they're messing around on the banking side, fraud, calling it golf clubs when it's poker pay, that's not cool.
Exactly. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it is that there's someone in the U.S. Attorney's Office there, and I don't know which prosecutor it is, but they really don't like online gambling. And they're not a big fan of it. They're not a big believer. And in fact, the Department of Justice maintains, even though there aren't any laws that say so, that all online gambling is illegal. And so they take that mandate very seriously. And so that's the first aspect to it, as to why it's happening in the Southern District of New York. As to why this particular case happened, this has actually been the culmination of a series of cases. It started with NetTeller, which was a completely accidental case for the Southern District of New York. It was the e-wallet company. It came from an unrelated investigation. They stumbled on the NetTeller, found out what was going on in there, went after NetTeller and busted NetTeller. So based on the information that they got from NetTeller, they started going after other payment processors because an online gambling ecosystem is only as good as the ability to move money. So they busted out other online gambling payment processors. And eventually they got to a guy named Daniel Svetkov, who ran this company called Intabil. And this was a company that processed payments for the online gambling world.
It's a service. We're a service economy.
It's a service for a service economy. And so he was providing this service. And he was arrested in Las Vegas recently. And
on what charges?
Same charges as Full Tilt and Poker Stars, money laundering, wire fraud, that sort of thing.
Was he disguising the payments as
FTD? He was disguising
FTD,
the payments.
I don't know what flowers.
He was disguising the payments, and he was moving money back and forth to the online poker rooms. Well, he turned around, and he flipped on Poker Stars and Full Tilt and Ultimate Bet and Absolute Poker. And so that's how we've arrived at this point. Now, this indictment was actually sealed in the beginning of March. So they've been working on this for a while. And so then it becomes, all right, why did they unseal on April 15th? It could be they unsealed it because that was the time to unseal it.
Yeah.
It could also be that they had a tip that some people were leaving the country. And the third option is, or the third possibility is, and it's probably a combination of all of these things, is they saw the deals between Poker Stars and Wynn and Full Tilt and the Fratas,
right.
And they said, you want to know what? We've got a sealed indictment on these guys. Let's just end right now and end it right now.
You can't help wondering, though. I mean, in this world, you know, is somebody else way back in there moving in on this world when all these have folded? Will somebody come in, resurrect this, and, you know, be the future mogul of this realm?
Well, there are always going to be people who are willing to take U.S. play. There are online poker rooms right now that are accepting U.S. play. And so it all depends on how they can move money in or out of the system. But the bottom line is the big Las Vegas companies, they want legalized, regulated online poker. They know this is a massive industry. Right now, Caesars is lobbying hard for a federal solution to regulated online poker.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the big U.S. crackdown on online poker. Billions of dollars in there, millions of players, we're told, an industry and a culture put in the spotlight on April 15th. They're calling it Black Friday in the online poker world, when the big sites in the U.S. from offshore locations, but those sites shut down. A lot of assets frozen, a lot of charges here, a lot of potential years in jail. Vin Narayanan joins us. He's managing editor at the Casino City Times with me in the studio. And from Salem, Oregon, Jeffrey Standen, professor at Willamette University, teaches sports and gaming law. Jeff Standen, what is it in the law that would have to, that might change for this to be revived, or do you think it's just a sunk ship and going to stay there?
Well, I think that's a good question. That points up, I think, the mistake that the Poker Player Alliance is making, and that...
Is it a lobbying group, the Alliance?
Yeah, the lobbying group that's on behalf of poker players, and that is that they are focusing, at least as far as I can tell, on finding a federal solution to the problem, lobbying the U.S. Congress to create a law that legalizes and regulates, as one of the callers mentioned, Internet poker. And the beauty of the federal statutes is that none of them actually prohibit poker today. What they prohibit is they enforce only state law. So if state law prohibits poker, then poker is illegal under federal law. So anyway, the situation is this, that we can go state by state. And if in your state poker is legal, then you should be allowed to play online.
But it's the Internet. How do you police it state by state? I mean, it's all over the place. How would that work if there were different laws in different states? Could everybody play if just Nevada or Delaware legalizes it? Could you play anywhere in the country?
You could play if you were in those states. It's done on a lot of Internet service providers are able to offer their product to people in some localities and not others. They go by the IP address.
Yeah.
And so in some states, in many states, in fact, even most in this country, online poker play is legal. And therefore, in those states, those people who live there or who are present in those states should be allowed to play online. The 2006 statute, people misconstrue it. It is not a statute that prohibits online poker play. It's a statute that says, has a specific exception, and says that if poker is legal in the state in which you're living and is legal on the offshore location where the server is located, then it's perfectly legal under federal law for that person to play and for the online operator to take your money and for the bank to process that money.
Does it matter in individual states or nationally if poker is considered a game of skill or a game of chance? Is that a key legal difference, Jeff?
It is. It's a key legal difference, but it's, again, a matter of state law. Some states have held that poker is predominantly a game of skill and therefore is legal. Other states have held to the contrary. And so we do not need a national, federal, single resolution of the problem, because some people will say poker is, you know, endemically bad and should not be permitted, and other people will say it's perfectly acceptable. We can have, as we do have, a state-by-state resolution. And if you don't want poker in your family or in your community, you can live in Utah or Hawaii or now the state of Washington. And if you do like poker, and you can live somewhere else.
Wow. Move to the poker. Let's go to our listeners. Nick in Newton, Massachusetts. Nick, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I just wanted to make a quick comment. I find it sort of ridiculous and depressing that the government should shut down online poker, but none of the gamblers who ruin the economy have gone to jail.
Wall Street not going to jail, but maybe some poker operators going to jail. Nick, we've got it. I appreciate your call. Let me get one more. Nashville, Tennessee. John is calling. John, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I also agree with the previous caller. I find this a ridiculous waste of time and resources that we're even sitting here having to have this conversation in this economy. And they're criminalizing a whole sect of the population. It's granny, you know, morality enforcement, almost akin to, say, the marijuana laws, when the public really doesn't give a, you know, crap one way or the other.
But what about our listener who says it's destructive to families? You get addicted to poker online. You're going to, you know.
Sounds like a grandmother to me.
Well, yeah, or a mother trying to make it work. But, John, I appreciate your call. A lot of response online. You know, Toyota says, I know a few online poker players. Some of them make a living doing it. Just as your guests have said, many making $100,000, $200,000 a year. School teachers who would make $5,000 or $10,000 a weekend. I've heard that many of them hide their earnings from the IRS. Anna asks, are all these players paying taxes? I don't know, Vin. What do we know about that? If it was all sort of being shunted around in these funny banking, stuff, was anybody paying taxes on these earnings?
The really good ones are. And the really smart players are, and the ones that are operating above board are. And the reason they know this is the IRS doesn't care where your income comes from, for the most part.
Right.
As long as you report it and as long as you pay your taxes on it, they're okay. So most of the players who make a living and who are serious about making a living online, they pay their taxes. And I'm sure if we talked to Scott, who was on the show earlier, he would have said he paid his taxes too. Gamblers pay their taxes in Las Vegas. People are paying their taxes online. So that's the thing. I just want to circle back for a minute to this idea versus federal versus state solution for online poker. The problem, I mean, and I agree with Jeff in that I think it's a mistake to go after a federal solution only. The problem with doing it on a state-by-state approach is player liquidity. So let's just say it is legal to do it in South Dakota,
okay. But
South Dakota doesn't have an arrangement with other states to pool their players. There aren't enough players in South Dakota to support online poker. Online poker is one of those games where you need lots of players.
But couldn't you play with any other residents of any other state where it was legal?
Not the way it's set up right now.
Huh.
I mean, the UIGEA has the specific carve-out for intrastate play, which is you can allow it within the borders of your state, but once you cross the states, you can't do that. Now, there's no law that creates states from setting up agreements with each other, but there are only a couple of states that really have enough players that say, all right, if you want to do it just within the borders of the state, we'll let you do it. California's big enough,
yeah.
Florida's big enough,
sure.
New York's big enough.
So those could become poker centers. Chris in Plainfield, Connecticut. Chris, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
This thing about, first of all, addiction, we're going to stop outlaw sex. People have sex addiction. People have addiction to food. This April 15th to me seems a little prophetic. The money that could be revenued, we could get from the revenue from this, is unbelievable. Why don't they go over the state of Rhode Island, which is, it's illegal in the state of Rhode Island to have slot machines or any game of chance. What they do at Twin Rivers is they call them lottery machines. It's gambling, you can play blackjack, you can play poker, but it's a way around the law. Same thing in Connecticut with the two casinos. It's illegal to have slot machines in Connecticut, except on the Indian reservations where they pay the state 25% of the take.
So online poker, you say, what, a mistake? Green light it, let it roll, no problem with you?
Well, what I'm saying is people want to do this. It's obvious. Saying that people get addicted to pornography. Pornography is legal, unless it's child pornography. You cannot... People are going to do this, and you might as well control it and not have it, bring it into the United States. And the federal government's going to be the one that set the rules, because you'll never get the states to agree on this and that. And most people I know who play online, you bet they play their taxes, because they used to. I believe it was Doyle Brunson that once said, "This may be legal, it may not, but you better pay your taxes on it." Remember Al Capone, that's how they got here.
Chris, I appreciate your call. I mean, there's that argument for let it all roll. Here's Corey online, says it's porn, chat rooms, religious fanaticism, beer, alcohol, myriad other things that give life color. We have to let people have their vices, even if some go overboard. But Jeff Standen, you know very well, there have been many studies done over a long time that show that people can get addicted to gambling. Here's one form of it. I mean, there's a downside here, too. Is there a way to acknowledge that and, you know, at the same without, you know, taking it off the boards completely, Jeff?
Well, we do that in casinos where we prohibit underage players from participating, where some states have rules that prohibit the addicted gambler from being serviced in the casino. And there are methods to accomplish the same result online. In fact, arguably, online operators are better at identifying the problem gamblers, because every transaction a gambler makes is very obvious. It's right there and recorded over the Internet.
Yeah.
Whereas in a casino, one can get chips and whatnot and perhaps be a little bit surreptitious about it. So arguably, the online operators are actually in a better position to police problem gambling.
Here's Brian in Greenville, Tennessee. Brian, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, well, I guess my take on it is quite simply, I'm a casual player. I play for fun. But at the end of the day, what is the government trying to accomplish with the shutdown? And in reality, in my mind, I can take every penny I had in online poker and go open an E-Trade account, and I can say, well, I'm going to put it on this stock, and it's gambling, because I don't know anything about stocks.
Right.
The difference is the government is getting their take. With this, even though it is a game of skill, because obviously your better players, they don't luck into all of the money they're winning.
Yeah.
They do it consistently.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no argument that the government can make that it makes sense to do anything other than to tax it and regulate it. They need to figure out how they're going to do it and bring it back. People
right.
are always going to have gambling addictions or other addictions. This is just an excuse to take it away till they can tax it.
Brian, did you get your foot caught in the door when it slammed on April 15th? Did you have money on some of these sites?
Yeah, I had money on Full Tilt and PokerStars. Not in comparison to a lot of these people, not very much, but to me it was a good amount of money.
Yeah, I appreciate your call. Here's North of the Border writing in. Says, my image of poker was that of my father and his cronies smoking cigars around a table in the garage on Saturday night. Is it just me, he, she writes, or have we in the meantime become a nation of gamblers? Is there now a more pervasive and insidious gambler's mentality afoot, informing everything from tax policy to how we spend our retirement? I mean, Vin, you write for Casino City Times, so this is your neck of the woods. But, I mean, on the one hand, we hear a lot of callers saying, come on, give people their fun. Life's a gamble. On the other hand, is there some moral vantage from which we as a nation have an interest in saying, let's not turn everything into gambling here?
Yeah, it's a tough question in that if you look at the demographics of casino goers right now, they're all 50s. Mid-50s and up. So that's an older demographic. The people playing online, that's a younger demographic. So the people playing online right now, they're just going to replace the current generation of gamblers that's at casinos right now. So that's mm-hmm. how casinos are looking to replace their current generation of gamblers. As far as the moral question goes, I think Jeff makes a great point. The online gaming companies, and this is held true in England, where it's heavily regulated and they do a very good job of regulating mm-hmm. it, there's no increase in problem gambling in England as a result of online gaming. There have been several studies that show that. But yeah, online gambling is a problem, just like alcoholism is, just like anything else is. And if it's going to be a problem, you have to regulate and you have to take care of it. So I think you can't ignore the moral issues, but on the other hand, You have to approach it from an adult's being adults thing. This is an adult behavior. Adults can choose to do it if they want and live with the consequences.
Let's get a call from Miles in Detroit, Michigan. Miles, thanks for calling. What do you think?
Thanks, Tom. Well, I think it should be kept amongst friends, and it's gotten way too commercialized. And if the government really wants to put a stop on it, they should just ban it completely and have it in its few key spots. Like I think there's a spot, Tunica, Mississippi, Las Vegas, Nevada, maybe another spot, Atlantic City, New Jersey, and just ban it completely.
Ban it, except to sort of keep it in the gambling centers. Of course, there are so many of those if you look across the country now. Appreciate your call from Detroit there, Miles. Jeff Standen, why is part of me thinking that when all the smoke clears here, what we might see is these offshore sites out of the picture and the big American gambling interests, somehow having pushed this through Congress or states and owning the online poker that they didn't used to own? I mean, is this going to end up maybe owned by the gambling bigs in this country when all is said and done, Jeff?
Well, it might be. There's an awful lot of money to be made here. It's a very big business. For many, many years, the large Las Vegas casinos were resistant to online play for the ideas that Vin cites, that they saw it as competition for their mm-hmm. players. But I think there's a strong sense now that they're really not in competition. It's really a different kind of gambler, a different kind of player who likes to go online, different demographically, a different taste for the game. They play volume games. They try to reduce their variance through lots and lots of action. And so I think it's a real business opportunity there. And if a company like Harrah's or Caesars, whatever, would lend its name to a big online operator, backed by law that gave them a safe harbor to do that, I think eventually one day you could see the local, if you will, companies dominate this market.
They are doing that now.
Plenty of lobbying going on right now. Look in your crystal ball. What do you see coming, Vin?
Within 5 years, either at the state level or the federal level, and it's tough to say which, there's going to be regulated online poker playing in the United States. And it's going to be and if it happens at the federal level, it's going to be the big companies, your Caesars, your MGMs, your Las Vegas Sands, Steve Wynn's. They're going to be the guys that partner with existing online poker software providers, provide the game out to play, and you'll have it across the country. If it's happening at the state level, then you have local casinos that'll weigh in. So your Foxwoods and Mohegan Suns in Connecticut, basket, the Seminoles down in Florida. Mm-hmm. That's where it'll go.
You're saying all this with a lot of confidence. Why are you so confident this it will happen?
Because the push is on within the gaming industry.
Are they that powerful? If the push is on, it happens?
Absolutely. Because they were the ones that didn't want this to happen early on when they thought it was going to cannibalize their customer base. They were adamantly,
they didn't want online poker in the beginning. They thought people would just stay home, but they didn't.
They didn't. What they found out happened was online poker created a whole new customer base that would come to the casinos and play poker. And they realized that their casino population, or casino target audience, is aging, and they need to replace it with a new audience, and they need to replace it with an audience that's comfortable coming to casinos to gamble, and they're turning to online gaming to do it. Right now, if you're in Gen X or Gen Y, you're making all your decisions online. And if you don't have a significant presence online, you're going to lose out. And it's not just me saying that. This is Jan Jones, a vice president of government relations at Caesars, saying that. And so they see the light. They've changed their minds on this. And once the gaming industry decides it wants something, it goes after, and it goes after it hard.
That may be a little glimpse of the future right there. For right now, online poker shut down April 15th, Black Friday, and it's done for the moment. Stay tuned. See who deals the cards next. Vin Narayanan, managing editor at the Casino City Times. It's been great to have you with us today. Thank you so much for coming in, Vin.
Thank you for having me.
And Jeffrey Standen at Willamette University, joining us from Salem, Oregon today. Thanks for your legal eye on this, Jeff. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for being here. What an interesting world we live in. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us. Here's Lady Gaga. With my love, glucose, just like a chicken.